Cool. Awesome, guys. All right. Well, welcome to, actually, it's the third season of Existence Podcast. John's been here before. We have a new guest for the first episode of the third season.
Etta's mom,
also known as Nicole. Mm-hmm. What's your last name?
Sullivan?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Where's that from? What kind of name is that?
Irish.
It's Irish? Okay.
As Irish as you get.
Sweet. Sweet. Well, thanks for being on, Nicole. Thanks for being on, John. John's been on before. He knows the vibes. He knows.
Shouts out to all the followers out there.
All them followers out there.
Yeah, no. They're probably sick of hearing my voice. Yeah. As always.
But for those who haven't, John, introduce yourself. Who are you? What do you got going on?
I am Evan's best friend, aka friend soulmate, and we out here in Portland, Maine, just living life. I'm currently just exploring new options, and that's my life right now, is being a new person in Portland, Maine.
There we go.
Whatever that means. I don't even know what that means, but that's what I'm doing.
Whatever that may mean to each of us. Nicole?
I'm Etta's mom.
Etta's mom, and this is lovely dog right here. I don't know if you could see the dog off screen, but
that's just pretty much my whole personality.
Yeah,
I got Etta about 2 months ago, and that's just who I am now. There's just no other person.
So where are you from? What brings you to Maine?
I'm from Newburyport, Mass.
Okay,
so not that far away from Portland. It's about an hour away.
Yeah. I might ask you questions I've already asked you, but it's not for me. It's for the people.
Yeah, no, the people want to know.
The people want to know.
No, for sure.
Who is this mysterious woman who has appeared on the podcast?
Yes, I moved to Portland in August, so 5 months ago.
5 months ago?
I'm going to do the math quick.
And how do you enjoy Portland, Maine?
I love Portland, Maine.
Why? And the mayor's watching.
The mayor's watching. Keep this in mind.
Well, it's very funky and fun, and there's lots of different varieties of people, but it's not like a big city like Boston, like you can walk anywhere you want. Mm-hmm. I really like that.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Characters. I enjoy that.
Yeah, there you go. There's a lot of characters out here for sure.
Characters.
I feel like there's more characters than you would expect that out here. There's a lot of people walking the streets.
Yeah. But a lot of different people, because there's also people who, I don't know, like you would find just like in a big city, like kind of just like normal, like everyday work people. And then there's characters.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good mix of people. It's fun.
Yeah. No, for sure. Awesome. Well, thanks guys for being on. So, Nicole, you've never been on before, so this podcast is the third season, so who knows what I'm doing? I don't even know what I'm doing, but here we are doing it.
Does anybody actually?
I think that's the point, right? Existence itself, nobody knows what's going on. No. Nicole, I'm going to start with you. What do you want to get out of life? What do you do, and what do you want to get out of it? And this is a broad question, so take it however you want.
What I want to get out of life? I'm going to take that question as when I leave the earth, I would like to leave behind a lot of people who know and love me.
Okay. Do you mind speaking up a little bit closer? Yeah, there you go. Why do you think that people have this this innate feeling that people want to be loved?
Like, why do people want to be loved?
Yeah, why do people want to be loved?
I think love is the best thing that this world or earth or your existence can offer. Like, if you don't have love, like, what other purpose is there to life?
Mm-hmm. What do you think love is?
Love is just caring for someone or something, like, to your bones. Like, you can just feel like you just care for them so deeply, and you would just do anything. You'd put them before yourself always.
Mm-hmm. John?
What do I think love is?
Yeah.
It's definitely one of the strongest emotions we have as humans.
So you view it as an emotion?
Yeah. Well, I think it goes more than that. But it's one of our strongest emotions. But I think that emotion ties into like a lot of different feelings. But I think it's the strongest. At the core, it's one of our strongest emotions we have as a human. And I feel like that ties into, like, I don't know. I think it ties into a lot of different things, but at the core, love is an emotion, I would say.
Mm. Do you when you think about love, do you view it from like what do you think about the concept of love in terms of like, I think when I think about love, I think of like everything exists within love, or do you see love as something as like an outward expression, something that is like something that you can't, it's like everything for me, it's like is subsumed by love, and it's not necessarily object. It's like is something. It's like something that we are exist within. Do you view it as that, or do you view it as something that you like try, that is something that is within something bigger?
I would say, I would start off, it's, I don't think you can control it. I think it's just something that is. And I think that's what's so strong about it, is it's like, it's not something that you're choosing to do per se. It's something that is there. It's something that happens in our brain chemistry. And I think that's, it's not necessarily like a necessarily inward or outward feeling or anything like that. It's just something that is. Mm. So I think it comes.
It's a product of like your brain chemistry.
I think so. I think it's what you perceive things, and it's how you view things. And if you connect with certain objects or people or anything in life, it's something that you just have a deeper feeling towards than something else. It's something that just is for you.
Mm. Is it when you say it is for you, like what is it that
I don't think you choose love. I don't think you can necessarily like, I'm choosing to love this person, or I'm choosing to love this object or something. It's just something that is, and you figure that out along the road. Mm. You're like, oh, I've always like loved this thing, or I've always loved this person.
So it's something you kind of fall into?
Yeah. I think it's like cut and dry. Like it's like, you either don't love something or you love something. That's how I've always loved. It's just like, it's either black or white for okay. me. And it feels like it's just, if I have to realize that I'm like love something or someone, it'll take me time to figure that out, but it's always been there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. Yeah, for sure. I feel the same way as like the people that I have loved before, like romantically or otherwise. It's just, it is something that you kind of discover about yourself, that so you discover that it is there. It's not necessarily something that like comes as like a, I don't know. It's a process to get to that realization, but it's not necessarily the realization isn't the product. It's just a realization.
I think the hardest part about it is like when you try to think back, like if you fall in love with somebody, like when you, the first time you say, I love you to someone, mm-hmm. like I feel like most of the time we can say that like, oh, we've loved them before I've like, realize that and said it out loud, but you can't pinpoint the time. It's not like there's like a one day you just love that person. It's like, it's always just kind of been there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it's like. It is a gradual inclination, but when it happens, it's there. It's, you can't explain it. You can't pinpoint it, but it is just black and white. It goes from like something that you like, someone that you don't love, and then there's someone that you do love. There is just a cut and dry, like you either don't love someone or you do love someone.
Yeah.
But the like, realizing that you love someone is gradual. It takes time for you to figure that out.
Yeah. No. Nicole, do you view love as like a black and white thing, or do you view it as like a process that you kind of come into something as?
Well, I lean towards the spiritual side.
Okay.
So like, I believe in soulmates, like soul ties, that it's all like an energy thing. So like it does, I mean, it can take time, but I also think like the people that you've loved, like you loved in different lifetimes, like that's why you just like know. But it also has to grow over time. Like you're not just gonna like meet your soulmate and know like immediately, but like when you meet the person, you're gonna meet the person, it's gonna happen.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Can you kind of talk about what you mean by other lifetimes?
I believe our souls are like, we're more than just our bodies, that we have souls. So when we pass on, like we go into different lifetimes, and you have soulmates and soul ties and soul best friends and soul people that like, you just meet someone, like you feel connected. Like when I met John, like I felt like there was a connection that we met in a different lifetime, kind of thing.
Agreed.
Uh-huh. Mm.
What do you think a soul is?
To me, it's just like an energy. So like your soul is just like the energy that makes you, and kind of like auras and stuff like that. Like your soul is just a bunch of energy of what you are, who you are, what you think, what you feel.
Mm. Yeah. Is an aura different from a soul, or is it kind of a product of the soul?
It can kind of be both. Like depends on how you look at it. Cause like your aura surrounds your soul in different colors, but like one is the same.
Your aura surrounds your soul in different colors, but one is the same.
like they can be the same. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like it's not two separate things. Like, your soul is your soul, but like your aura is also surrounds your soul.
Okay. Do you think that the body, like, are you kind of like a, when you think about like existence, do you think about it dualistically, like the body and soul are separate, or do you think of them as the same thing?
I would probably say separate.
Why?
I think your body is just your physical tie to the world, but your soul is different and can move on to different places.
Do you have any idea where you go?
No.
You don't have any idea? I think that's the thing is, like, nobody has any idea, but I think a lot of people have, theories, yeah. Yes. Which is actually really, like, I think that's like, the most interesting thing, because, like, life is just a massive mystery. We're all just stuck in this one existence, and we don't know what it is, but we're all trying to figure it out. But I think that's why, like, you know, I think death is one of those things where, you know, it's for me, it's not just something that motivates me to get stuff done here, but it motivates me to just think about it because it's just a mystery. It's just something that is, to me, something that, like, is immensely interesting to solve. You know what I mean? Like, what is it? What is death? Does death even exist? And so, like, that's kind of the angle I take about it. But
we won't know until we die. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you too, going back on love, do you guys think love is predestined?
Predestined?
Yeah.
Like, do you think it's like, it's just not up to us, and it's like, it's going to happen regardless? Or do you think that we have, like, the choice or the actions to be loved or to love someone? Is it predestined?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting question, because I think this is, like, free will is something is something I think about a lot. But more than that, I don't know if that's different from stuff, anything that's, like, fated to happen. Like, something that can be determined, if we lived in a deterministic universe, is very different from something that's, like, fatalistic. So something that's, like, it's going to happen versus you don't have a choice on whether it's going to happen. Those are two different things. But when we think about love, I think it is one of those things where I'm not really sure whether or not we have a choice on anything. But specifically with love, I feel like less of a choice with it, because it's like something so powerful that you just kind of fall into, like we were talking about earlier. It's just kind of something that you experience and you realize is there without you really choosing it.
Do you think it's more powerful that it's already predestined? It's not something that you have a choice in, or do you think it would be more powerful if we had a choice in the matter?
Well, I don't know. I think my mind is kind of going towards whether or not I can separate love from whether I can separate everything else that is predestined. Can everything else be predestined or not predestined? And then love be predestined separately? Like, is that something separate?
Well, I think there's other things that we could talk about that might not be predestined, but I'm specifically talking about love, because I feel like that's, like, a huge one. Like, do we have a choice in that?
You know, I think when I think about that, I think I'm more on the along the lines of probably not. No, I don't. I mean, it's like we were talking about earlier. It's like, you experience it. You don't make it happen. You don't make yourself love somebody. Like, it just, at least this is from my personal subjective experiences, I have never made myself love somebody. It's just, I've found people and then I've loved them, and it's not really a choice. But that's, I would say that's just kind of how I view it. But
what do you think? I mean, I feel like there's two routes that you can say with this, because it's like I think we have a choice in the people we meet, and then we have, like, we already have, like, maybe, like, set goals or, like, what's the word? Like preconditions. When you meet someone, you're like, oh, I'm like, I want to date this person, or like, I feel something different with this person, but you don't love them at that point. You're just getting to know them. So, like, do you think it's your choice of getting into that makes you maybe fall in love with people? Or do you think it's something that's already there and you're just trying to find it? What is it for you?
Well, I don't think you can choose love. Like, for sure. Like, when you fall for someone, like, you just fall for someone. Like, you get that, like, moment. Like, I have, like, specific moments that, like, I remember, and, like, past partners being like, oh, like, I know now. Like, that's, you know, it is what it is. But
It is always that, like, aha, I feel like that's what's funny. It's always like, you like finally get to a point where you're like, oh, I've been silly. Like, why haven't I thought about this before? Like, of course.
Yeah. But again, like going back to like soulmates, like you can be soulmates, but you might not like work out in this lifetime or be meant to even be together in this lifetime.
Do you think?
But that doesn't take away from you like loving that person.
Yeah, no, for sure. But you can always, like, the free will part to me is choosing that person and like choosing to be with that person. Because you can like find your soulmate, and you can also in this lifetime realize that this isn't the right time to be with them. And maybe in this lifetime you aren't meant to be together in it.
So you think maybe at some other life, in some other lives, some other existences, there is a right time to be with that person. It's just not this one.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like even like on top of that, if we simplify it, like it could be just time frames in this life right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've talked about this a lot where it's like, you know, you can meet someone and it's like great. And you're like, oh, we just haven't like matured enough in life yet. Or we're on like separate paths right now, but doesn't mean that like maybe 20 years down the line or 10 years down the line, or even sooner than that, that couldn't happen again. You know,
yeah.
Like I feel like time frames just in our lifetime is a huge one too. Like you can meet people, and it's just like you just found them a little too early or too late in your life.
Yeah. I also feel like on that level, though, like you can love someone so much that you can accept that it's not the right time. Like you can be like, yes, like this person deserves more than like I could give them, or like a different life because like you love them so much. Like leaving, I think that is like what all the poets like write about. Like that's like the truth of love. Like if you can like let someone go, even if you love them, because like you know it's better for them, like that is the definition of love.
Why is it so hard to let go of someone you love?
Because it's the strongest emotion that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally entices everything in your existence. It literally envelop everything in your life with that love. Everything. So when that love per se leaves you, and it doesn't mean that the love isn't still there, but it's just gone now. Like you don't have that person enveloping that, it literally changes your world. Yeah. You go from being overwhelmed in that, and that's your core to you. That's your standing ground. That's what you're sitting on top of, to being completely swept off, and that love goes away. That is just the biggest change in life. That's why it's so hard letting that go. But you know, because you love that person and they love you, you know you have to let that go.
Mm-hmm. I think one of like the biggest lessons in life to learn is like, just because you love them doesn't mean you need to be with them, at least at this point. You know what I mean? And so like that's, and who knows what the future may hold, but like at the whatever present moment you come to, you realize like this might, the best thing for us both because we love each other is to not be with each other. And that's such a hard pill to swallow. And you know, I it's something that like doing once is hard enough, and you know, then you do it multiple times and you're like, oh, this really, really sucks. What do you think the difference is between different types of love? I mean, there's like romantic love, and there's different types of, I mean, the people you love romantically are very different types of love. Like at least from the way I experience love, like I can love somebody romantically and then love somebody else romantically in a completely different way. What do you think is behind that?
I think it's a different, like the different personalities. Like you can meet someone, even if you met someone that's very similar to your past relationship or past partner or whatever. It's like you're still bringing in two completely different personalities into one, and that love is going to be very different from your past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't mean that there aren't similarities or like certain bits of that love that feel very familiar, but I think overall it's its own thing. Through different people, it's through different relationships and different partners, it's always going to be a separate and special love. That's what's so exciting about it, because it's something so new. Mm-hmm. There's similarities there, but in the end, it's something that's exciting and new, and that's why I said it envelops you, because you're like, well, I've never felt this way before. It feels similar, but it's different now. It's so much different. You know, it doesn't take away from that love that you had. Not at all, you know, it just, it feels familiar, but it's like, well, this is something so special, I'm holding on to this again, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's just different between each person that agrees to be with each other. It's just a different love between each one,
yeah.
Each relationship.
Yeah. Nicole, have you ever been surprised at surprised by the person you've loved? Like, have you ever fallen in love with someone and been surprised that it's that type of person?
At first, yeah. But, like, I think, like, looking back now, like, you make connections in your brain. You're like, oh, yeah, like, of course. Like, because then you love the person. It's like everything they do and say and act. You're like, oh, I've always loved this. When you look back, you're like, wait, no, I actually didn't.
Yeah.
But, yes, I've definitely been surprised for sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Love, huh? What a topic. I kind of want to switch gears here. Nicole, what's your favorite thing to talk about?
Aliens.
Aliens.
Yeah.
I was going to go there, but you said it before me.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
Aliens. Do you believe in aliens? Aliens exist. They exist?
Yeah, and the government knows that they exist.
And the government knows that they exist.
Yeah, and they've been plotting against us for decades.
Decades?
That aliens are bad and we need to fear them. And they're these crazy things that are come out of the sky and going to abduct us.
So if there are aliens out there, do you think they're good or they're bad?
I don't know if they're good or bad, like compared to like what in our like existence. I think in like their own world, like they're probably great and like fine. But I think they're just so powerful and so much beyond like our knowledge and what we have like technology wise. That they'd probably be terrifying to know, like, what kind of power they hold for us. And, like, we probably would say that's bad.
I feel like if we have aliens, they have to be observers. Like, at this point. Like, we haven't been...
Okay, so here's my theory. Or here's... This is what...
Let us...
Is
let
what
us hear.
I think. So, there's evidence of aliens, you know, like, building the pyramids. Like, there's always been this. Like, it started, like, we were Homo sapiens. No, we were Neanderthals. And aliens came down and took the Neanderthal DNA and... took their DNA and made Homo sapiens. That's how we gained consciousness. That's how we gained, like, become humans who could speak and write and, like, have conscious thoughts. And it got to a point where they were giving us technology to build pyramids and, like, all these, like, kind of stuff. They made the decision to leave Earth because they wanted us to find our own existence and be our own, you know, culture and whatever it is. But now the federal government knows, like, the president... The CIA knows that aliens exist, but forever they've been trying to turn us against them because there's going to come a point where we're going to have war with them. And like, they don't want to, like, the government wants us to, like, stand behind it and be like, yeah, of course we're going to go to war against aliens. Like, they're these, like, scary extraterrestrial things that are trying to, like, do this and this and that.
What do you think their, like, reason is behind that, though? Like, why would they want us to go against them?
Did they try to help us?
I think they've always been helping us. But I think right now they are observing us and they're just kind of staying out and like letting us do our thing and see if we're just going to, you know, use atomic bombs to blow up the whole population.
Which we are.
Yeah.
At this rate.
I think this is like just more of like they're just watching us to see like if we sink or swim and not intervene yet.
But why would the government think that's bad if back in the day they know that aliens procreated with Neanderthals and created human? I mean, created human beings that we know today, and were Neanderthals not like conscious back then?
No, they were just like normal. They were just like cows or you know,
are cows
horses.
Not conscious?
Not in the way we are now.
So they have accelerated our conscious experience. Aliens.
Yes.
What are aliens do? What is their?
That's what we're trying to find out, dude.
Well, I think the correct term is extraterrestrials.
The politically, politically correct term?
Yeah, politically correct term. Sorry for everyone that I offended saying aliens. Yeah.
Sorry, aliens out there.
Sorry.
Don't beam us up,
please.
If you're
in the room with us.
I think aliens can be like, I think aliens can be something that we would not even expect. It. Like, aliens could be here right now in this room, and we would have no idea because it's something so foreign to our own experience or our own consciousness that we'd have no idea what it's like to be an alien. We couldn't even conceive of what an alien would look like. Possibly, at least. I don't know.
I like I said, I think that like if they're coming here, like if we don't have the technology to like see other extraterrestrial things out there, then they're coming to visit us. So I think that they're observers, but they haven't like maybe that like in the past, like we've heard these like stories of like, you know, Roswell or whatever, where it's like, oh, there's like a crash and it's been like evidence and then they like clear it up, you know, like there is. I definitely believe that like these stories like have happened, but it's like it's just so rare and like between all of the like other crazy, outrageous, like not true stories that like, that's what I said. I think that they're observers. Like, I think that they're wanting, like, it's what you said. It's like, are we going to blow each other up? Like they're passing by us. If they're passing by us, like they already have way more technology than we do. So they're kind of looking at us like, oh, these people are kind of interesting. Like, what are these species doing on this like round ball, you know? So it's like, and then they get a little closer and like maybe sometimes it fails or like one of us sees it and they're like, oh, this story. And it's like, maybe those stories were real, but I still think that they're not like enticed with our life. I think if we did, it would be more obvious. I think it would, like, a lot of us would believe it because a lot of it would be a lot more like true to what we see and what we believe.
I think the government fully knows and they have communications with like their leadership. And I think the government is fully preparing us in the next few decades to come out saying that they know about aliens, that aliens are real, and that they're going to make
they have already
a connection with us. Well, have you guys ever noticed every single time that they announce like, oh yeah, we did have like these weird things that we found in like the CIA, or like we do have like some things of aliens, always happens when it's like a crazy news time, like COVID happens, they drop an alien bomb, or like some other big news story, like they'll drop an alien bomb because like it kind of lessens the blow a little bit. Yeah. So for the next 20 years, they're going to be dropping these little tiny bombs to the point where we're numb to aliens. Where like everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, of course they're real. So when they do come and they do show up, we're not going to be panicking and going crazy. Like they're giving us little breadcrumbs. And every single time there's some big thing that happens, there's always an alien story that comes out. And like they do that specifically to soften the blow. So it's not just the big story. It's kind of just in the background.
Do you think it numbs you out? Do you think it's like to control our like reaction to it, like it's like, so when it does come time that we're not going like freaking like wacko and crazy? Mm-hmm. Or do you think it's like controlling it like in the bad part, like they don't want us to know? Like,
no, they're gonna tell us soon. I think the other life forms have probably said like, we've given you guys enough time, or like there's some reason that they're gonna come in the next however many decades and start making like connections with us. And I think the government is preparing the public for that, so there isn't a full-on like panic. People are like going into like their bunkers and like not coming out, or like, you know, going to the grocery store and, you know, buying $10,000 worth of food because they, you know, we
do that over a disease, like let alone freaking aliens.
Yeah. No,
like, I think we're easily
spooked. The next is that it's gonna be like a body or something like that, and they're gonna tell us that it's like 10,000 years old. And then like not to panic. And then they're going to like start being like, oh, okay, it's actually earlier than that. And it's going to start coming down. It's like by the time in 100 years, it's going to be such small news that an alien made contact.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this though. In today's age, like what's the hard hitting evidence? Because I feel like there's already like pretty credible stories out there right now, and there's still people who are like, I don't believe that. But it's like, what are the ones that are going to come out where we're like, oh no, as like a human race, we're like, we can't, like this is real now, like this is actually like they're here and they're real, like,
ancient civilizations.
But like, but I'm saying like right now, like what would have to be on the news for us to like believe know what I mean, like what, or like us actually physically seeing it, like what's the like telltale sign? Because I feel like there are like breadcrumbs right now, and some people are paying attention to it and believe it, and others are like, you know, like being like, no, I don't believe that, that's not credible. And or even if they see it on the news, they're like, ah, they don't know what they're talking about, you know. What's like the hard hitting evidence in today's age?
It's weird now because I feel like there's so much like CGI stuff.
I know.
Or just like AI kind of stuff. Like you can easily make it look real. And I think a lot of people like watching videos now, it's like, okay, like was that real? Like did that really happen? Or is that just like some kid like messing around with, you know, CGI stuff? I think it would have to, a government agency like FBI or CIA would have to come out and say like, this is, you know, real. Valid source that like our agents have found, but like a credible source.
Do you think that the government has enough like competency to hold the secret of an alien? Like if the government, whatever that may mean to you, has people that know and have known for decades that aliens exist, do you think that they could viably keep that a secret for this amount of time?
I don't think they have.
That's what I agree with.
I don't think they have. I think things have leaked out. There's people who come out all the time saying all these kind of stuff, and they're known as like heretics, like crazy people, because nobody believes them. But things leak out all the time from the government about aliens. And like, they're after in 100 years from now, people are going to be like, oh my God, they were telling the truth. Like, they told us everything. Right. We literally had all the facts.
The whistleblowers, right? Like, yeah. The whistleblowers. And then, like, some people, like, pay attention to the stories. And they're like, oh, I believe you. And then they're discredited because the whole organization, like, the head guy comes up and he's like, yeah, these are false allegations. It's like, of course you're going to, like, but that's the guy that's going to be telling the biggest lie, you know? Like who actually knows? But it's like, I feel like there are breadcrumbs. It's like, oh, maybe we should pay attention to this. Maybe he's speaking out of his ass. Like, maybe. But, like, maybe he's telling the truth, too. Like, he is a former CIA operative or FBI or whatever you want to go into. But it's like, there are these guys that come out. It's like, that's got to have some credit, right?
I feel like we need all those guys who are at the CIA, FBI, like, I don't know, commercial contractor people who are, like, work for these secret organizations that, like, they all need to come together in a conference.
Yeah.
Get together and be like, look, this is what we know.
Right.
This is what they're not telling us. That would be really interesting.
Well, there is those times that have happened, you know, it's just so few because, like, not a lot of people want to do that because it ruins their life. You've heard about these people that whistleblow and it's like, they don't, no one wants to hire them after that. Like, people are like, discredit them as crazy. It's like, that's a big thing to come out of, like, hey, this is my experience. And it was kind of crazy. People are like, yeah, we can't trust this guy anymore. Yeah. It's like, how do you come out and say those things, you know?
If you sign any, like, normal NDAs person. And, like, all this, like, kind of stuff, like, it could be written right in that contract, like, if you ever speak of this or, like, it's known that you, like, said anything on this, like, you'll lose every cent that you ever owned. Like, you can be, like, displaced from your life, like, kind of thing. Like, they would take that so seriously, and 100% they have to sign NDA waivers and, like, all this other stuff that talking out, I'm sure, like, getting a whole group of people, like, the government get that video wiped from the internet so fast.
Yeah, I mean,
they fully have that power.
I used to have a secret clearance. So, I mean, I've signed stuff where I worked for an organization that, like, I can't talk about what I did
in the military.
No, outside the military. And so it's like,
That would be a fun thing to talk about. That would get some views. Yeah,
that would get some views. Yeah. Also get me in jail too. But
so that's the thing though. Like, that's a good point. Like, that brings up is, like, the people that have, like, stepped past that just to risk their life, be like, the people should know. It's like, I think it is up to us to be like, oh, maybe we should maybe listen to some of these stories. I'm not saying that everything out there is real. Like, we know that. Like, there's some absurd stories, but it's like, it's interesting to hear them. And it's like, what are the ones that are telling the truth? It's pretty interesting.
Also, when the whistleblowers happen, the government fully has the ability and resources to go in and change that person's life, being like, oh, this person was actually on this med. This person had, like, instances of mental health stuff, and, like, they fully discredit that person. Yeah. Like, you always see it where it's like, you see these videos and then it's like, oh, I don't know, like, this person had, like, this mental illness or, like, this going on, like, he's not to be, like, trusted, and then you never hear about them, like, again.
Why is the government, you mentioned because we're going to get into war with aliens, but, like, why is the government so hesitant at, if it is true that aliens do exist, why is it such a hard line to cross for, like, the government to tell us just blatantly what it is? Why is it such a difficult thing for them?
Because aliens, the extraterrestrials have so much power and such a force that we can't even understand, and technology and knowledge, that one, specifically the United States, wants to be the top power always and wants to be in power. If, like, the extraterrestrials came down here and said, okay, now we're now ruling this planet, you know, like, America's not taking that well. Like, we are not just going to be like, oh yeah, like, here's the USA. Like, we'll follow, like, your rule. Like, they want to be in power. I think that maybe not everybody in the world, like, knows about it. Like, maybe other countries aren't fully aware of it. But I think that our nation wouldn't want other nations, like North Korea, to know about that power and, like, try to reach out to the extraterrestrials and, like, gain, like, their support and now, like, their allies against the other countries.
Mm-hmm. That makes another good topic. I feel like I said, I'm a big believer in observers. I think that there's extraterrestrials out there that observe our planet. And I think they're waiting for us to actually, like, finally stop fighting each other. Like, I feel like they're, like, looking at us and they're like, these freaking monkeys are, like, stupid.
Like, oh, we're an experiment, 100%. They're watching us.
Like, we're like these land monkeys that are, like, like, angry because you crossed the line. It's like, I think an outside source of that, like, they gotta be, whatever you want to say of, like, what intelligent means, like, they have to be somewhat more intelligent than us per se, because it's like they're coming to observe us. And if that's the case, then it's like they got to see that and be like, these guys got to figure out what the hell they're doing first between each other before we can intervene. That's the way I look at it.
Do you think it's possible for humans to stop fighting? Or if they can do it, if the aliens can do it, so they're waiting for, if, like you said,
I don't necessarily think that it's like the, but like I feel like if I would like to think that if they're ones out there like observing us, they have like, I don't know, it's hard because it's like, what does that actually mean? But I feel like they're probably intelligent enough to like not have the issues that we have. So it's like
same type of issues.
Yeah, same type of issues. Like you know, like. Yeah, like it just more advanced issues for them or whatever. It's like to see these, like I said, in my head, it's like their perspective of us is like these like angry ants fighting each other on a hill. And it's like once it like we all calm down and relax, you know, then they're like, oh, okay, like maybe we can go and like see what's going on with them, you know. But until then, it's just like these people are just blowing each other up. Why would I want to intervene?
I think that they fully are not perfect like existence, and like they still fight and have like disagreements, arguments. Like I'm sure Earth is a disagreement that they all like fight over and like have opinions on and are like going back and forth on being we need to intervene or like we should like take over this planet and like put them to work and like, you know, be our slaves. And this whole other group's probably like, no, like, you know, we should let them live their own lives. And I'm sure it's a huge debate, you know, like every single.
But I feel like if that was the case, though, like there would be ones that come down to like
there
really
are
try
ones
to help
that
us.
Come down.
But they don't like there's no like hard tell signs of us them trying to help us because it's like. If there is anything, it's been covered up by our own people. But I think that's why I said I think they're observers because they don't mean to intervene. They're literally just there to like, hey, let's see like what these people are doing.
I disagree though, because really? I think with like the pyramids or like you want to talk about like Stonehenge or like you within like the Bible, it says that we are made in the eye of our creator or in the image of our creator. And that can be interpreted that we were made from the like of extraterrestrials and like all
like
that kind
experiment.
Of stuff. Well, if they mix their DNA to like make us and like give us their intelligence and stuff like that.
Do you think we're a fell experiment? Do you think like some like alien boy?
I think
like
that,
in high school was
and then
this is why we question like existence and everything is like there's something that we didn't get developed enough in our experiment. They're like, oh, it's a lost cause. These people don't know what they're doing. Like
I think
they didn't finish us off because we don't have the answers to literally anything.
Yeah, I think there's like two lines of thought when people think about like aliens observing us and like taking interest in us is like one. Are we interesting enough to be observed? And or two, like maybe we're really interesting and this is why they're observing. And it's like, I don't know. I'm really not sure what to take on it. Because like at the end of the day, like what I think is kind of a question I want to ask you guys is like, what is the most compelling piece of evidence there is in terms of like hard proof that aliens exist? What is something that like, or is it just a lot of things that have built up on top of each other? Or is it like, how do you feel like, why are you so compelled to say that aliens do exist?
I'm not religious, again. But there is a lot of stuff that points to like early gods and goddesses were actually aliens coming from the sky and like having all these like powers and all this like kind of stuff and like being praised and doing all these things that seem like unworldly actually came from aliens. Like all the gods that we write about, all the gods that we see as being also like powerful and all that kind of stuff is just because early life saw aliens and like or had stories of aliens and began worshiping them.
Can that not be due to just our limited capabilities and knowledge back then as the human species coming up with ideas? Like you see thunder and you're like, wow, God's angry at us. Must be the thunder god, because like you just look up and it's just an insane, you hear the insane thunder.
There's a good point to that. I always thought that too, but I think we're discrediting people that were extremely intelligent for their time. I think there was people that are out there that are like really like, or like universally, I think is a good point. Like what you said too, is like, maybe. Like throughout history, dude, on all aspects, no matter what religions, there's always a story about some higher power.
coming from the sky.
Somehow higher power. And then there's like the stories across the board of every religion about like a major flood and stuff like that. Like, so there's these things that are like, okay, like there's some credibility here because it's like these events have happened because on all aspect, whatever you want to believe, whatever book you're reading, there's cross references in all of it. And the core of that is, like you said, is some like higher power or something in the sky or something. And it's like, I think we're discrediting it that if we're just like, oh, that's not true. We were just dumb back then. We weren't dumb. Yeah. We just didn't have the technology. It doesn't mean that we weren't intelligent. Yeah. Didn't mean that there was incredibly smart people for those times, for millions and millions of years. Like, we didn't know that, you know? Yes.
No, you're right. And I think it speaks to the fact that like, there's still so much, future generations would look at us and think about how stupid were these
exactly.
people. But at the same time, there was a serious lack of knowledge that we know now that they weren't privy to back then. And I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm just saying there's probably multiple ways to view that, especially when there's no like hard, I mean, like what's the hard evidence we have back then? It's just passed down stories about aliens existing. I mean, a lot of it is due to our own interpretation of what the ancient civilizations thought they were or thought about. I mean, like you mentioned, like the pyramids or whatever. Like, that's our interpretation of, like, if the aliens built the pyramids, if that's what you believe, then that is our interpretation of what might have happened. It's not their interpretation of what might have happened.
I think we can boil it down even simpler than that. It's like, out of the entire universe, we realize how massive our universe is. You're telling me there's not one thing out there that's living?
No, I do believe in it. I think aliens do exist.
Sound like a hater.
No, but
I'm not a hater.
No, but that's my point. I was like, we don't even have to go into as far as like books or religion or what we thought. It's like, let's just base off of like the facts that we have at hand. Our universe is insanely enormous. It's huge. Can't even fathom it. We literally can't even fathom it. It's like, and you're telling me we're the only ones in here? That's bullshit, dude.
No, but
there's no way.
I will counter that.
There's no way.
The conditions to let life live is also astronomical.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. But
we actually might, it could be argued that like creating life in the perfect existence and like having to get to this level of like consciousness and like ability to function is probably just as like uncommon as it would be.
I agree and I think there's an argument there, but I also think that there are things that we can say, like, oh, there are light forms out there, but it's like on a completely different aspect than we can even start to understand or
it
comprehend.
It could also be so small that like we could never see it with our
exactly.
eyes.
Exactly. Or like another dimension
so
or something.
Tiny,
like, there's so many different ways that you can go about it. And it's like, doesn't mean that they're not there. It's just in our monkey brains, we're limited in like how we perceive things. So they might be out there, but we would never know.
Well, yeah. And to your point, Nicole, I think you could totally be right, but then we could also be totally wrong in terms of like whether or not these conditions were like so astronomically high that it just became like the perfect concatenation of events where we've created.
Maybe it's more common than we think.
Or the fact that like, I think there's kind of like a thought that goes that like, you know, like it only exists to us because it is the place that we are in. Like it feels like it would be like a one in a trillion chance that life exists here, but only because we're here, and it's not because it's like that's actually the chances. It's like it feels like it's made for us, and it feels like everything's perfect and everything has to go in these conditions. But that's only because we are in these conditions and not because these are like a universal principle of conditions.
Evan, I have a question for you.
Yes.
How did existence start?
What, the podcast or existence itself?
No, existence itself. How did the universe begin? How did matter, atoms, begin?
Well, that's a question, huh? Mm-hmm. I think this is like
Big Banger.
Yeah, Big Banger. Probably not. No, I mean, the Big Bang is just the end of where our knowledge just has nothing left to go right now. Like currently, we are just at. I mean, we used to think that, you know, the sky was the end of the limit. Like that was like you look up in the blue sky and like that's it. That's all there is, and we've expanded that to the solar system, and now we have like the universe. Whatever that means, and like, there's got to be things past that. I don't think that the Big Bang is the end all be all for all existence. It may be maybe for this sort of existence, but like in terms of existence itself, I highly doubt that the Big Bang, but the Big Bang is just a placeholder for something that we don't know. The Big Bang is something that is, it is an idea that we have held up because that's where our knowledge ends. That's where our knowledge stops existing because we don't know what's past that. But it doesn't mean that that is inherently what, when existence started. What it is though, I mean, I think that's like everything. I mean, that's like when science, when you think about like physics or chemistry or anything like quantum mechanics, like you think about like the smallest, you try to discover like what are the smallest particles in existence? What are the building blocks of existence? There's like particles and quarks or whatever, but those things, we still don't know what they are. Like they're still illusory to us because we don't know what a quark is inherently. We know that it exists, but we don't know what it is. And it's like, that's a mystery right there. I have no idea. But, you know, where it comes from, what do you think? I don't know.
I have no opinions on this one. This one, I'm like, I have thought about. And the Big Bang doesn't make sense to me. Why? I mean, I don't have like that level of knowledge to understand it to begin with, but to have absolutely nothing, like zero. Like also the thought of zero is not understandable. Like nothing, like zero is not like nothing. Mm-hmm. Like not even black space, like nothing, not even space.
It's the same for infinity. We don't actually know what infinity means. That means nothing to us.
So yeah, that one I think is probably the biggest question in life that no one will ever be able to answer. Like how life actually started.
Well, I think
insane.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like,
maybe the aliens will tell us.
Yeah, maybe they will. Maybe.
I feel like even if they had an answer for us, we wouldn't be able to comprehend it. We'd be like, I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what that means. it's always been there. Well, what does that mean? No, I'm just trying to tell you that it's always been there. I just don't know what that means.
It's crazy to hear like the stories of people take like DMT and they're like, oh, I got the blueprints to existence and I understood it. And then I came down and I was like, I have no idea what it meant. But I think that's, I mean, this is why I think like consciousness is so interesting, because like what we think existence is predicated on our own conscious experience of it. Like everything is through the lens of consciousness. What is consciousness? What is existence without consciousness? The awareness of existence. And are they linked or are they separate? Nobody speak first. That was a question.
I don't know.
You know what that kind of question kind of like reminds me of? Like, did you ever have that question in science class where it's like, is fire alive? And you like, you go through all like the stages, like, does fire eat? And it's like, yeah, fire, you know, can eat air. Mm. Or like, does fire breathe? And it's like, yeah, it's using oxygen and burning CO2. Mm-hmm. And you like go through all like the check marks of like what it is to like to be living. And fire hits like every single box, but it's not alive.
Yeah. Who says it's not alive? What is alive?
I'm just throwing this out here. What if it's like way more simple than that? Like we actually don't have like consciousness. Like, I don't know. Like we fabricate what a definition of like what consciousness means to us. But in reality, we're just like you said, it's like if we're like predestined, we don't have actually free will. It's like maybe we're just organisms just moving and like doing things. Like we think, but like that's just like how we were, like that's literally how we were like created. Like that's how like we went from, you know, being these little organisms until we are now. And we're like, we give ourselves like way too much credit. Like we're super smart and all that. Mm-hmm. But like, what if it's like dumber than that? Maybe it's just like we're meant to think these things and do these things because that's just how we are. Yeah. That's who we are. We have no choice in the matter.
But we've built this artificial idea of what a self is to us, and then we not really.
But what if that's a part of it? What if that's a part of the like us being our like these organisms moving around, meeting each other, doing stuff, like blowing each other up?
Well,
like,
certainly
each other. Like, what if that's part of like is because we're like, oh, we're smart. Like, we're thinking about this thing. We're actually building this up. We have a consciousness. We're aware of these things. It's like, what if that's just part of our species? What if that's just part of our being these organisms?
I think it's definitely a part of that because, I mean, that's what we are doing right now. I mean, we can't separate that. We know what we're doing and we are thinking, we are conscious of our own awareness of things.
Yeah, but what if that's just simplified? That's just what we're meant to do. Like, why do we have to like bring it further than that. Like maybe it's more simple
How what do you think is being done? Like, how do you think that's being amplified?
What? Say it again?
Like, how do you think that's being, what is more simple? Like, what would be more expanded on that? Like, that is what we are doing. What is more than that?
I think that, like, sometimes we give ourselves, like, more credit where we're, like, we want to know more questions and answers, and it's just, like, it's more simplified than that. It's, like, it's just, like, what you said, it's being going back to free will, it's, like, we don't actually, like, we're not doing this because we're, like, smarter and we're, like, thinking about these and we have consciousness. It's just more of, like, oh, this is just, like, this is just part of the process of being alive and being species. Like, just, mm-hmm. like, it's just thinking about those things. That's just a normal reaction to how we are.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like,
no.
It's not like we're like, oh, we're really like breaking out of the loop. We're really like, yeah. we're doing DMT and we're like figuring out the universe. It's like, maybe we're just like experimenting with things and we're just like questioning things because we have the ability to, but maybe it's simplified of like looking at a cow and it's like, maybe it's conscious and stuff like that, but it's probably a lot more simplified. Would have for that, for something else, or like for a bigger picture.
Yeah, well, I think you touched on it. Like, maybe we have the ability to do it,
right.
but it's not like inherent. Like, I mean, having the ability and doing it are inherently, they're kind of tied to the same thing. I mean,
right.
it's like you have the ability to do everything that humans do, to experience consciousness.
Right.
But that is the point, is to right. experience consciousness.
But it's confusing because the only thing that we can base that off of is like other species and organisms. And the only thing that we have that are other species and organisms to compare to are all relatively simpler than us. Does that make sense? So it's like, yep. it doesn't mean that it stops at us. Why do we keep thinking that we're where it ends? Yep. Like, why do we, because that's the only thing that we can observe is the stuff around us. So it's like, what if there's something else where like, we are the ant in the hill. They're like, oh, these dumb fucking ants. Like they're not conscious, or like, they don't have like, whatever. Mm-hmm. What if there's like something that's more intense than consciousness? But it's like, for us, like, that's where we're limited.
More intense than consciousness.
Yeah.
Like, what if,
you know
that's
what I mean?
Interesting.
But how would we even process that? Because that's where we are. But we limit ourselves. We're like, mm-hmm. we're the smartest. We're the ones that are most conscious. But it's like, I don't know. Maybe if there's like another thing in the air that we talk about, like maybe going back to aliens. Like, what if there's some other species out there that's just like, oh, these people think they're so smart. Like, these humans think they're so smart, and they don't even know what this means.
They're only conscious.
Where it's like, yeah, it's like conscious all the time of like everything. They know all the answers to everything, and it's like we would never be able to perceive that because we're just limiting ourselves of like, oh, we're smarter than ants. Like, yeah, of course we are.
Well, it's the only thing we can know. Like, I think that's like why I gravitate towards, because it's like it is the only thing you can know is that you are conscious. Like, the only thing that is, like, you might, I mean, if you take like a solipsistic view, like, you are the only thing that exists. I don't think that's true, but if you're looking subjectively at your, even like, if you're looking subjectively at your what experience is, like, you're the only thing that exists here. I can't prove that Nicole exists, but you would assume that
she exists.
She exists within my conscious experience. But like, you can't prove that she exists. No. And so maybe I think it's an interesting point. It's like, maybe there are things that are more,
but
maybe there are things that are more conscious than conscious, but to even begin to fathom what that is impossible, because we cannot fathom anything higher than consciousness itself.
Oh, I think we get comfort of like you said, like, I can't prove that like Nicole's exists, but like, because she has consciousness, we can both talk about it. We're like, oh no, we can all agree on that. Like, we're living this exact same thing. We're thinking about these things. Mm-hmm. We're like talking about these things. I think about the same thing. Like, I'm experiencing the same way. I'm living life in this like weird way, you know, but it's limited to just us. We can't start talking to a fucking cow and be like, you get this right. It's like, and we can't talk up. We can't talk up to something in the air, like an alien, and be like, oh, you get this right. It's like, mm-hmm. no, like, we have no idea. So it's like, we're limited because it's just like who we are as humans. And it's like, I think we give ourselves too much credit for that. Like, it's like, there's like, maybe there's something more, and we are just as simple as like an ant on the hill. That's my point.
Well, yeah. I mean, and then there's the idea. I think
we're just more complex beings. I think we're just more complex beings, but it's hard for us to justify that. Like, it ends with us because we only can observe lower than us.
Yeah.
Well, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And I think this ties into the concept that I think doesn't get enough credit, which is panpsychism, where everything is conscious. Like, the atoms, the particles, whatever is existence, the building block of existence, are conscious. They are inherently conscious. Consciousness is the fundamental. Like, that's what existence is consciousness itself. And so everything is all matter is a building block of consciousness. And so as consciousness grows, you grow into like humans and you grow into ants. And like this audio board is conscious, like the camera is conscious.
Well, then how do we have that memory of the other consciousness? Like, how do we not know?
Memory is a very different thing than consciousness. At least it could be conceived as a different thing of consciousness.
Because if we all have consciousness, wouldn't we have memories of us being conscious in another form?
We could, but
where it's like, oh, not to get disgusting here, but I remember being conscious as a sperm before I was a baby.
But you don't. Exactly. And so, but it's not. So that's why I don't think memory is necessarily linked to consciousness. A consciousness is simply experience. Like, okay, I'm not saying this is true, but I'm saying like you could conceive that consciousness as just experience, and just being experiencing something. So it doesn't necessarily have to be tied to memory. But what do you think memory is?
Memory all alone in the moonlight.
Or, I don't know. What do you think memory is, Nicole?
I took neurology classes in college. Yes. So memory, to me, is just a very scientific building blocks of the neurons, synapses.
It's a building block of the neuronic synapses?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know. I just, when I think of memory now, I just think of sitting in neurology classes and just seeing, you know, like how the synapses work and how the myelin sheath, what's it called? Myelin sheath, like, don't deteriorates and builds depending on, like, so the whole, like, use it or lose it is big in memory. So if you're not using your brain, that's where they see a lot of, like, cognitive decline in people. So like, the best way to keep your brain going is by using it.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Making those connections.
It's a muscle. Mm-hmm. Like anything, you know.
But once it's gone,
you can't get it back.
It's gone. Yeah. Once the connections are broken, the connections are broken.
What do you think the scariest disease to die of is from?
Disease?
Yeah.
I will say, so I just had a grandfather who passed from Alzheimer's.
I'm sorry.
And that one is hard. I was going to say
the same thing, actually.
Well, it's interesting. Just because he was suffering for about 5 years. In the first like 2 years, I think everyone was like super upset about it and super like trying to like be there with him every single day and like still trying to like make those connections, like, you know. But then it gets to a point where like he doesn't know anyone. Like, he doesn't know who I was. He doesn't have any memory of who I am or like any memories that we shared together. He doesn't have any memories of himself either. Like, he doesn't remember like what his favorite ice cream flavor is or like that he likes to go fishing or like things like that. And I feel like to go that way, like he died over 5 years. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a pretty tough way to go out, and then have your family watch you do that too. I think it would hurt me the most. Like, I don't want my family to have to watch that.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I think it does talk about like, goes back to the point of like, you don't need memory to be conscious, but you're like, he's still conscious. He's still aware of something. It just he's not remembering what those things are. And yeah, I think it's incredibly sad. I mean, I had like a great grandma when I was young who had Alzheimer's. And yeah, I remember like going into her place and she just didn't know her son, didn't know anybody. And he just, you know, she's just taken care of. But yeah, I think it's incredibly sad. I think it's one of those things where it's like the worst. It scares me so much where I was like a few years ago was like really scared that I was getting Alzheimer's.
like early onset.
Yeah, but like it was just like anxiety. Like I wasn't like anxious about it, but it was like something that was like in the back of my head was like, oh, you never know. And then it was like, I realized I was being dumb and I actually don't have Alzheimer's, but it's just because it's such a scary disease to like conceive of having, because you just forget everything. You can't remember anything. And if you can't remember anything, like what are you living for?
Yeah. Like, you just totally lose yourself and like who you are and like, yeah.
I feel like the scariest point about that is like, it's such a common disease. Like, I feel like, like if we actually like looked at all the diseases, there's probably ones that are like way more intense than Alzheimer's, but like that is one that's so common that happens to so many people that it's like, that's terrifying. Like, I like when you put, because I know we all have done it where it's like you put them in your shoes because like you can't help it because like you're experiencing it with them and you're like, that I don't even like, that's just sad and like terrifying at the same time. It's like, because they don't know. You can see on their face, they're like, are not choosing to be this way. They're like, I don't even know what my name is. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. Like, what would that be, feel like? It'd be terrible. It'd be confusing. And how long do you have to go through that? A couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I feel like definitely I want to put in a clause into my like my life plan, my life insurance plan, which is like, if I start losing my mind, like, just.
I know it, but you're not
stand up.
Legally allowed to.
I'm not allowed to do that?
Most state, no.
To say that if I'm, I can't get euthanized, right? It's like, there's only a handful of states.
I don't even know.
Like one state, right?
Maybe. Like I don't know. I know that most states, like you can't. Like you can be on, like you have to go to hospice and just.
Wait it out?
Yeah.
Just wait like
the
family, die.
If the person's unconscious for like years and like every single doctor said they're not coming awake, like they're dead. Like they're 99 years old. They have Alzheimer's, like they're gone. Like we're just, you know, waiting it out for the next 3 weeks until they pass. They can't just end their life.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I think there's a lot of good reasons to end your own life. I mean, and that's not like.
don't tell me the good time.
I don't say that lightly. I really don't say that lightly. But like there are diseases where you are terminally ill and you know, like this is it. I don't want to spend my life suffering, like where this is going to hurt me more to like spend an extra few months, a year alive, because it's just going to be painful to me and my body and my family. Like just end it now.
Yeah. But that does change across the board with different people too.
For sure. Yeah. But it's a personal decision. It's a personal decision.
Right.
It's a 100% a personal decision. You can't choose to end somebody else's life.
No.
Unless you like, you know, unless you're like, it's written down in the clause. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like if I had some terminal illness and I was like, I'm going to 6 months, it's like, that's it. But like, I don't want to go through that pain.
Yeah.
It's all like basically 99% chance I'm going to die.
But I feel like that's a whole nother conversation when it's like present. Like, like even if you're 80 years old, and even you're like, I've spent like a good amount of time in this, in this life. And you're like getting like, you know, like symptoms of like having like losing your memory and everything like that, and you're like, oh, I need to like do this before, like where I'm like, you know, if it gets real bad, like take me out or whatever. But it's like, I think even at that time you have to be like, do I really want to like just end it because of that? Like, I think that would be a hard conversation, even if you're a person where it's like, I don't want to ever have to go through that. It's like when it's there, like we can say this retrospectively because it's like, oh, it's like that's time. But it's like, what if like tomorrow you get diagnosed with Alzheimer's, like, and it's like, you're like, oh shit, you would seriously want to end it now? Like,
yeah, no,
it's crazy. That's a whole nother cabal game of talking about it tomorrow.
No, it's a good point because like with any, especially with death, is like the main thing that like you don't know what it's going to be like until you're faced with it. You know, it's until you're like, you're told, hey, you're going to die. It's like, I don't know what that's like. And I'm assuming you guys don't know what it's like. So it's like, it's as of yet, but like that's the thing. That's like, you don't know how your mind is going to react to anything, much less like being told you're going to die now. And like, even if you do have a terminal in this, like who's to say I think something differently? Who's to say I sign some contract today and think about it differently tomorrow? You know what I mean? And so like when I'm actually faced with the problem,
I would also apply that mindset and statement to like everything in life. Like, you truthfully do not know how you're going to react to a situation until you are in a situation. Mm-hmm. Like, everything that you ever judge people on, or like, I don't know. I've always like found like once you're in that situation, like you react so differently than how you would think that you would react.
I also think that brings up another good point. This is why I think it's incredibly important, which most of us humans don't ever do, is putting ourselves in other people's shoes, because it's like, how could they do that? Or like, and then you like think about like, oh, if I was doing that, hell yeah, I would run away. Like, you're like, no way I would like stay there, you know? And it's like, but I was in there judging them, you know? Same thing. It's like, it's a good point. It's like, we fail to realize that it's like, oh, like when it happens, you're like, oh, this is what people were talking about. Oh, I understand now, you know?
I don't think we account for emotions. Like sometimes, like there's things that are like, oh, like if somebody cheated on me, like I'd react totally calm and like be mature about it. And then it happens and you're like, I was a psychopath.
Yeah,
and
right,
it's like,
right,
and
right.
Then, and then you understand it. And right. You're like, oh,
I was like, and then that's like the aha moment where you're like, I understand why people go batshit crazy. Like, this is not a good feeling, you know? Yeah.
Well, Nicole, how do you think you become more of a person who kind of understands like other people's situations more?
Honestly, going through it. I think the best people I've ever met in my life have gone through shit. You know, like they have just had so many things that you'd be like, oh my God, like how did you like make it through? Like, how are you a good person and you've been through so much bad shit?
Mm-hmm. No, that's really good point. Yeah. No, that's really good. And it's just it's like with anything, it's gaining the experience of like learning. Cause you realize like when you look, you realize retrospectively, like you look back and you're like, oh, I wasn't doing good there, or I made mistakes there, and I should, and now that I've gone through it and had time to process and look back on these things, you understand how, from an objective standpoint, why or why not you did the things or you did the things you did do back then. And I think that's really important, because like you it's the only way to learn. Like, it's the only way to learn is to move forward and to experience life in a way that gives you the ability to kind of look back on things. And like that's how you do it. That's how you become mature. That's how you become a better person. But at the same time, like there are situations which I will never be in, and you will never be in, that you can look at and think, like, how do I put myself into the perspective that they're going to be? Even though I'm not in that situation, but you can give them credit. You can give them the empathy. You know what I mean?
I think there's also a point to touch on that too, where it's like, you also, on the other flip side of that, of a person that's gone through the experience and the one that has it and then is judging that other person or judging you about it, it's like you can't get angry with them or like get upset with them, because it's like they haven't gone through that. Like, you have, like, it's a lot harder for you to put yourself in that other person's shoe if you haven't learned it than for you just to be like react in like a normal way of being like, oh no, I reject that or whatever. And it's like, oh, you don't know what it's like, but you can't get upset with that person. Yeah. You can't be like, you're like, oh, you just need, like, you know, you're immature now. Like, you know, you have to also give that person the credit of like, oh, you've never been through it. So it's like, I can't sit there and blame you either. Like, you're sitting there blaming me of like, I did it. Mm-hmm. I went through this certain scenario poorly, but you've never been through it. But I also don't blame you because you haven't gone through it yet either. Yeah, you probably react the same way. Mm-hmm. But until you've done it, like, you wouldn't know. So mm-hmm. It's like, on the flip side of that too, it's like, if you're a person that has experience in a certain subject versus a person that hasn't had the experience in that subject, you can't look down on that person and be like angry with them for thinking a certain way about that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's giving people benefit of the doubt. Like, you can't. You can't get mad at somebody for not having gone through the experience that you went through.
Right. Or it's like, oh, you don't know what it's like. It's like, you can't be that way, because it's like, you know, how are they supposed to know until they go through it? Like I said, I think it's important for, like, if we can try to, is put yourself in that perspective and then try to understand. That's a way better starting ground to that point. But mm-hmm. but if you don't do it, that's just a normal reaction. You can't mm-hmm. get upset at that person.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I also think it's super interesting that people can have the same exact experience but have totally different outcomes.
Absolutely. We talk about this all the time, actually.
Like, what, like, I think about it in like simple terms of like, if you have, you know, like an alcoholic dad and you have like two kids and like one becomes an alcoholic and the other one like decides to never even look at alcohol, like, how does, like, do you con, like, I don't know, like, that to me is always interesting, how you choose those paths.
Or like kids, you know, being brought up in the same household and one of them freaking thrives in life, whatever that means, and then one is like horrible, like on the brink of death because they're just poor choices. And it's like, they were raised the exact same. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, it's like a nature versus nurture thing. I mean, like, it is a mix of both. Like, you're born biologically with certain brain chemistry, with certain makeup, with certain genetic factors that allow you to thrive or limit you, you know, depending on the circumstances. So you could have two identical twins raised by the same parents. One of them thrives. One of them maybe has a lot more struggles in life. And, you know, it's a very different situation because they are two separate people. Like, they are two people with distinct personalities. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I mean, I think it is a good point, especially like, especially when you are separated, because it's like, if you meet somebody who's gone through a similar situation, like you said, like alcoholic father or something, like, you know, a lot of people have alcoholic fathers, and like those two people meet and that one person like dealt with it completely differently than the other person. And then I feel like depending on who the person is, there might be room to like judge the other person because like, oh, I handled it way differently than you did. But I'm sure at the same time, there's a lot of room to find common ground there as well.
I would say, I feel like most of the time for situations like that, you can come to standing ground. It's like kind of what we were talking about before, is like like it's interesting to meet people that have gone through the experiences because they tend to be like pretty strong people. And it's like when you talk to them, I've also had an alcoholic dad. You can talk to them and you're like, find similarities in that because you're like, oh, you do know what it's like. You know, it could be a different situation, but there's still points in the story where you're like, oh, you actually understand what it's like to feel that way about another person. You know, it's like maybe they thought about it in a completely different way, but it still hurt, which is hurt on your aspect and hurt on their aspect. You know, yeah. I think there's a lot more common ground than there is differences in those stories.
Mm-hmm. I think just generally throughout just humanity, there's a lot more common ground than we want to give people credit for. Like we are all going through something together. And like the fact that everyone has their own traumas, everyone has their own BS that they're dealing with, everyone has the relationships that they're going through. Like everybody is going through something. Everyone has parents, whether they're there or not. Like everyone had some sort of experience being raised as a child. Like everyone's dealing with something. And there's so much common ground that we, I feel like, gloss over so quickly before we actually sit down and actually have a conversation or try to get to an understanding with people. And I think that's such a problem because that's what brings so much.
It's the key for us to get in a lot, man. Just understanding we're all experiencing this the same way. It is different, but in the end, like at our core, it's like we're all going through the same thing, man.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's like this sciencey saying, I guess, that that your genes load the gun, but the environment pulls the trigger. Mm. So you can have like all these like negative kind of like behaviors like in your genes, like alcoholism or like substance abuse or like anything like that. But it like depends on the environment and like what triggers those genes to like come out. And I always think that that's just interesting. Like what in the environment or like what life events triggers those genes to come out.
Yeah. And it's like, and your interpretation of like, I mean, it's like, again, it's like, free will, like do you have the choice to interpret things this way that you do, but like things happen and you do interpret it a certain way, and whether or not you choose to interpret it one way versus the other dictates how your future will be, and like everything is predicated on what you did before. So I mean, it's just difficult because like there's a lot. I think that's the thing, is like giving people the benefit of the doubt, giving them empathy, is like, look at, they were, and this, I think this is like radical empathy is like something I kind of think about a lot, is like, regardless of who they are, what they might say, what you agree with them on, whatever it is, like what their sign is, like we can all have some sort of common understanding that they have gone through their own BS. And just because they're doing the best they can to handle the situation they were dealt. Maybe it might not be the right way to handle it. They might do the wrong things. They might say the wrong things. They might be really messed up, but they're doing the best that they can with the tools that they have, with the life that they were given. And it's like when you give that to everybody, regardless of who it is, then you can come to you can begin to become much more empathetic to other people because you're like, look, I'm messed up. I say the wrong things. But I'm doing the best I can with what I have. Everybody, regardless of how messed up you think they are doing the best they can with what they have. Even if to the people they're talking to, it seems really messed up. They're still trying. They haven't given up. Like they're still trying, and it might be really bad. They might do it in the wrong way, but they're trying. And I think giving that credit to people is super important when you think about how do we become more understanding.
Yeah, and just to emphasize too, this could all be mental cages. Like you could have an absolute perfect life and still just be struggling mentally, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of struggle too that if you do have like a perfect life where like everything's good and like you're still struggling mentally, you're like, oh, but like, you're like, why? Mm-hmm. I think it's just always, you know, a good remembrance that you can struggle mentally and it's just as real as struggling in real life and having like those kind of pains.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I think like there's a truth at the core there is like that, like what you're saying is like, you know, people are trying their best for their situation and stuff like that. But on the flip side of that, like there's a reason why people there's wars and there's like like, you know, people that are butt heads and there's arguments and there's just, you know, all these like negative things, is because it is a natural reaction to take those people's experiences and reject them. You know, that's also a natural thing. It's not mm-hmm. like, it's like, obviously at the core, it's like we all want to believe the, like, you know, the truth at hand, which is like, hey, we're all trying our best here. We're all going through the same experience, but we're handling it differently for our environments, you know? And we can connect in that way. And it's like, if we can bring ourselves to come to that thought, but that's extremely hard. It's extremely hard because when we're in those situations with those people, you react how you're going to react. And a lot of times that can be negative. If they have a completely different lifestyle and a completely different perspective on how they view their life, and you talk to them about that and they argue their point and you argue your point, naturally it's going to be a negative thought of like, they don't know what they're talking about. Cause it's like, your whole life has been this truth and their whole life is the opposite of that truth. So naturally react negatively to that. So it's like, I also don't want to take away why there's so much war and like, you know, like why there's these like people in high powers that are doing awful, extremely awful things. It's like, that's not just them necessarily being dumb or whatever, like however we want to be, like point our fingers. It's like, there's just something there that we can all at least take from of like, oh, you're just reacting poorly to the situation, and we can also understand that as well, because we are all humans. We fuck up.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's even more of a truth than the truth of like, hey, we're all trying our best here. Like, I get that, but it's like, also, it's like, what part of us makes us human is because we fuck up a lot.
Are you making excuses for dropping A-bombs?
No, not at all. But I think I think it's just as important to understand why these things happen as well.
Yeah.
On top of like the truth at hand of like, we're all trying our best here.
Totally. And then you mean, it's like, you think about people in positions of authority, people in positions of like high levels of government. It's like, we don't know what it's like to have that power. I don't know what it's like to be a leader of an entire country. Even if I think I'm going to do the best I can, like, I guarantee you I'm going to mess up. And that's not an excuse to like drop bombs on other countries.
Yeah, hey,
not
at all. Just shouts out. Don't do that, guys. It's not a good thing.
But
I am not voting for John for president. He's like, they'll just understand I'm angry one day and I drop a few bombs. They'll get it.
No, but it is something that most people don't deal with, and we are viewing it from a lens of somebody that is the person who would get bombed, not the person that presses the bomb. And it's like that. Obviously, like.
It's important to understand both.
It's important to understand, at least important to be aware of what you might know. You know what I mean? It's like,
be
you don't
aware
know,
of like, yeah. how they're going about it. You know, exactly. 'Cause you're like, how could you? It's like, yeah, most of us can agree. How the hell could you? But it's like, also, there's a reason why they're reacting that way.
It doesn't make it right.
No,
it doesn't
not
make
at
it
all.
The right decision.
Not at all. But there's a reason why it's reacting. It's being aware of that reaction to that situation.
Could you guys take a life from another human?
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember because I was in the Marine Corps and I thought.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought about this a lot and I haven't killed anybody. But I was in a position where I would have had to if it got called for it. And so I remember having a lot of discussions with because I used to like fly in helicopters. And so I had a lot of discussions with a lot of pilots about this. Because like it was my job to protect the helicopter, like I was shooting guns at the side of it, and I remember like having one conversation with it was like in the middle of like the desert with like, I don't know, like 30 other guys in this one hut, and it was about this pilot, and it was like me and him having a conversation about taking other people's lives, and he used to be on the ground. Back in like 2004, like in Iraq, I forgot what it was exactly, but he ended up killing somebody that was like his son's age now. And it was like, I don't know, he's like 13 or something, like 12. And we ended up talking about that, and it was such an intense experience. And like, he asked me, do you think you could do that? Like, do you think you could do that? And I was like, I don't know. Like, that was the whole conversation. It was like, I don't know until I'm in that situation. I don't, like, that's the only thing I could say. And like, people gave me a lot of shit for that, especially being in the Marine Corps. Like, no, I'm gonna fucking kill him. And it's like, you don't know how you're going to be till you're face to face with, like, it's you and it's the person trying to kill you. And I don't know what it's gonna be like. If that day ever comes, then I'll deal with it that day. But like, but that's why so many people are so messed up in the military, because they come out of those situations and they're like, trying to morally and ethically and like socially and like spiritually trying to understand what they've done. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I mean, it's something that I wouldn't do it now. No. But like back then, when I was in the Marine Corps, I think possibly like totally possibility if somebody was trying to kill me and I had to kill them. But even now, like if somebody was trying to kill me, if somebody walked to the door and tried to kill me and kill everyone and kill you guys, like I would try to stop them. And if that meant killing them in self-defense, then that's a very different situation. You know what I mean? And it's not easy to know. It's impossible to know until you're in that situation.
I feel like self-defense is different. Maybe
it's still taking a life, though.
So, yeah,
I mean, so I think it's justifiable. It's like the only thing that's justifiable.
It would ease your conscience like a little bit, like knowing it was like the only way.
Yeah, because it's gonna haunt you for the rest of your life. But yeah. It's like, what other choice did I have? I wouldn't be here right now if it was that case, or other people wouldn't be here.
You know, and
I think it's an easy one that most people can agree on. It's like, no, you had to do what you had to do. Like, you're not alone in that.
You know how in like in Harry Potter to like get the Horcruxes. Like, you have to kill somebody. Like, that's the only way that you can, to shred a human soul into pieces is to kill somebody. And I fully, like, I think that's so true. Like, the only way to, like, break a soul is to, like, commit, like, that sort of act.
It makes a good point. It's, you literally can't do anything more than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say if you're doing it out of, like, love or, like, protection or, like, fear for like a loved one, I don't know if it would like break the soul if you're doing it in like a like aggressive
torturous way. Do you view the military killing people different from like self-defense? You could speak honestly, please.
Listen, I fully support the military.
You don't have 100%,
like that's the hardest. No, I do. It's the hardest job. I don't think a lot. I think it's just different because like it's such like a high scale. I mean, when you're in the moment and it's, you know, between like killing a foreign enemy or like your brother getting shot, like obviously you're going to like do what you got to do. I don't know. It's just so large scale to me that it feels different.
Yeah. I think it is very different, but I think at the same time, like, this is the thing I've thought about a lot, and this is like why I've really had to like divorce myself from like my military background in order to like come back and be like try to reconcile myself with what I was a part of, is because like people that have been in the military don't understand like the people who go into the military. It's very like most of the people in the military get in when they're 18. Because they get sucked into like the propaganda that the military tells them that these people in high levels of government want them, you know, need a certain quota of people to join the military. And they have, especially in the U.S. when it's just a massive complex that we have, and you get sucked into an organization that you have no idea what it's really about until you're there. And then at that point, you're not thinking when you're like on the front lines, when you're kicking in doors in some foreign country, you're just trying to protect yourself at that point. You're literally just, you're trying to protect yourself and the group you're with. It's not like consciously, like, yeah, there's larger governmental political forces at play. But when you're face to face with somebody that's shooting at you or trying to kill you and your friends, like that's what the moment is. It's not like people want to kill people. Not everyone in the military is like a bloodthirsty maniac who wants to like kill people.
Yeah. No, I think the general feeling is that that's not it.
Yeah.
I mean, what the military does to protect us is the most important job like anyone ever has. But it is still, at the end of the day, like,
it's a necessary evil.
Yes.
I think it's,
and
like,
I know that we can't just like stop fighting and good.
This is how I feel.
But like, I wish I could just stop it all. I'd be like, hey, like, we don't actually have to do this.
Of course. I think most people agree, like, killing's bad. Like, most people can agree on that. Like, insecticide's out there. But it's like, I think it's way more complicated that with that in the world, and everybody understands that. So it's a necessary evil. We have to have a military to protect ourselves because people have so many theories and decisions and perspectives on everything that we're gonna clash at some point, and if we're not protected, like, we're vulnerable and we will be killed, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, it's a necessary evil, but like, you don't blame anybody for like being like, oh, like how could you have this like powerful military? It's like, it's a necessary evil.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we agree, guys. Like if we, to the core, like we can agree like this, like we don't want to be killing anybody, but like we also have to agree that we're not perfect and we make mistakes. And that means that we're going to try to kill each other.
Yeah.
Like no matter how we justify anything, like at the core, we're going to make that mistake every freaking time.
I think the problems arise when we sort of upplay how necessary it might be. Like there is a lot of like, it's like de-escalation, I feel like, is not getting enough credit. Like there's a lot of countries trying to kill a lot of other countries. But like there's not enough effort put into like having a global de-escalation effort to be like, right now, yeah, the military is necessary, because if the U.S. got rid of its military completely tomorrow, we would be screwed and we'd probably get blown up. But if we had a collective effort to like try to bring down, and I think I hope we're on that path, but it's just such a hard path to walk, because
yeah,
like,
but the problem with that, Evan, is like we're tribes, and if we de-escalate it, then what's gonna say to like, oh, these guys are, you know, these guys are like weakening, like this is our time to attack. How do we know on the other side that they're going to be with us in the de-escalation of the military per se?
Oh, it's because we got to get over humans and then go straight to AI consciousness. Because like, yeah, I think yeah. like humans are tribal.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's, we need
There's
to
something.
Move, we need to have some sort of evolutionary step away from our tribalism.
You right? know what's going to happen?
But I think that's what we can all agree. Like we all know that like we're not at all at that point. So it's like mm-hmm. we have to have these things to protect us, because if we don't, we will die.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen? Aliens are going to present themselves and we are going to become one tribe against the extraterrestrials. We are going to all team up and we're all going to get on the same page and we're going to leave everything behind, and then we'll be one tribe. We'll be Earth. Once the rest of the universe is open up to us, we're not going to be like Japan or India, the United States. Like, we are just going to be Earth, and that will be our tribe.
Pangea.
Yeah, but then we're going to fight other planets.
Yeah, and then we're going to war with planets.
But
yeah.
then it's like, that's even worse, because it's like planetary.
Who's that territory guy from the material, Avengers?
Military. Oh, Captain America?
No.
Robert Downey Jr.?
No, the guy who wants to blow up half the population.
I feel like it's every Avengers. I don't know.
The purple man.
I don't watch the Avengers. I'm sorry.
So you know what also rattles my brain, talking about like killing people and how it would like legit shred your soul. Like it would be something that would just mess up anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Serial killers.
Yeah, that's what I always like. I've never really. It's very interesting.
Like it just doesn't affect them. Like it thrills them.
Yeah. It's. I think it's a psychological.
That goes against all human nature.
It's a psychological defect. Like it's a brain.
Yeah,
like
that's a brain chemistry. That, yeah. That's, the connection's just not there.
There's a missing thing.
Yeah. There's like a missing link in your brain chemistry.
Some misstep that happens neurologically. That's like.
It's just past that.
Yeah, I mean, and
it goes directly to like happiness or thrill. Instead of like horrid experience, a negative thought process on it, it goes
that's
straight
like
to
big connection to not.
Yeah,
like
that's why there's so few.
Just like, caught.
I think there's also like that we can take hope in, like.
I always think about that. I think once you start diving into like serial killers, you're like, how many are out there right
especially
now?
Especially in the 70s, 80s, where like there wasn't good technology or like cameras. There was probably so many serial
It is
killers.
Fascinating. It is fascinating because you're like, what? How many times have I walked by these people?
Also the characteristics.
Seriously,
no,
though.
I thought about that. The characteristics of serial killers too, like they're always like incredibly intelligent and like there has to be something like
charming.
I want to, like their brains need to be studied, because maybe when you lose all empathy, like you gain like so much.
Yeah.
Just.
No, they, I feel like they have, I feel like there's been studies of like,
that's so scary.
Like of like the brain chemistry and it's, there is like huge differences between like normal, like functioning human, like just regular citizens versus like serial killers that taken like multiple lives. There's like they'll see like the brain chemistry and there's like huge differences.
Yeah, but that's all like those studies have had. Like you can see depression in someone's brain, or you can see like anxiety in someone's brain.
But but specifically with like it's the same thing with a serial killer, where you can pinpoint
crazy.
You can see a serial killer's brain and realize that they're a serial killer. I mean, I don't know what the technology is at right now, but like the point remains that it's in their neurological makeup or whatever it is, and that's. I think it's really scary. I think it's something that I always some people are like super fascinated, and I've always just been scared about
it. It's also like, it's also really sad too, because it's like a lot of the stories that you hear about serial killers have had like the worst prenup, like childhood of their, like, of like anybody else. And it's just like sad, and you're like, oh, so they're like, they got a like lot of
the
like,
genes, though, the gun, the environment pulls the trigger.
Good point.
Oh, it's a cycle. Like, just like child rapists or something. Like, they were raped as a child.
It's literally just a combination of everything. It's like you had this, like, already this defect of brain chemistry that most people didn't have. And then it was amplified because they had a horrible childhood.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm going to pick your brains. So anxiety is when you think, like, on, like, when you're looking at the brain. It's the amygdala in your head that's firing neurons at inappropriate times and like inappropriate quantities, which gives you like that anxiety thing. Like it sets off the alarms in your brain. So it's not real. Mm-hmm. Like whatever is giving you like panic attacks and all that kind of stuff, like really like isn't there, but it's just in your head and like your chemistry and the amygdala firing off wrong. Mm-hmm. And like you wouldn't blame someone for having anxiety. Like you'd never be like, oh, like, you know, like it's not your fault that you have anxiety. Like it's a mental illness. You know what I mean? We're saying that, you know, being a serial killer is mental illness. So how do we blame them?
Well,
like schizophrenia. When you're talking about schizophrenia, like they physically see things. Like it's not just like they're like making things up, being like, oh, I saw something. The chemistry in their brain is changing so that they can see somebody in the room. Like they think there's somebody standing over in there in the corner, like fully believe it, can hear them, can see them just like a normal person. They hear actual voices, but we would never like blame someone for having schizophrenia and be like, oh, it's a mental illness. Like, you feel bad for them. Do you feel bad for serial killers?
I've thought about this a lot. And you're right. It's like anybody. Same thing with, you know, like child rapists or whatever. It's there.
Yeah, I was reading the same thing.
It is. I mean, it's like sensitive topic, which I totally understand. But I don't blame them. Like, it's like with anything, I don't blame anybody for doing. That's just the environment they were brought up in. That's just the chemistry they were born into. That's who they are. It doesn't negate that their actions have there's problems with what they do. It doesn't negate the fact that their actions cause things that are harmful to other people. And so there's still a moral issue with that. You know what I mean? And so that's where we can find what we do with them, like, justifiable, but not because of them as a person, not because like you blame the person, but their acts are still reprehensible. You know what I mean? And so it's not like you don't blame it's who they are, which is very unfortunate, but it's not their fault. And I think that's why I think the criminal justice system right now is like so messed up, because it's like, I mean, there's a lot of like blaming the person instead of like blaming, like you have to look at like the upbringing and all these other things, but. Right. But, you know,
I also think to expand upon your point too is like, I think you're also not giving you're not giving the credit, if you don't think that way, for the people that do have those issues and they recognize that, or like people that are like, you know, like are attracted to like children or stuff like that, and they're like, hey, I admit that I am attracted and I will never act out on that because I know that it's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people out there that have that, or someone that has like, hey, I'm seeing people and like I'm having bad thoughts and like it's like it won't end well. I need help now. It's like you're taking away from the people that recognize those issues as well too. Yeah. So it's like, I think that's also the case is like, yeah, they're out there. It's just like, you can't blame anybody because that's literally what is in their chemistry, but it's still up to them to recognize that and understand that it's not okay in our society, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is not an okay thing to do. Yeah. Because you're, like you said, you still have the actions of, like, doing those things that hurt other people.
Yeah, totally. There's still consequences to your actions. So it doesn't mean that there's no justifiable, like, morality there. Like, there's something to blame. It's not the person, but it's the action.
But is that just how the society, like, we created? So, like, now, this is a society that we created. and we have determined that this is morally right or this is not morally right.
But and I would say because like as an entire race, as the human race, most people can agree that that thing is wrong. Most people can agree that like, hey, we can't just be killing each other. Like, we can all agree on that, right? And then there's like the 2% of the population is like, no, I don't see any issue with that. It's like, you're outvoted here. Like, you can't do that, you know?
Yeah. No, this is, I love talking about morality because like morality is like the most, one of the most interesting things is like dictates everything that we do and like whether or not we think it's good or bad. But I think like morality, I was thinking about this morning, is like morality is like, it's like, it's a state of like whether or not we're moving away or towards a state of well-being. Like whether or not what that is can be what that is. I think there is some sort of like objective morality. I think there is some sort of like way we can think about morality objectively, and it's more towards a better or worse state of well-being rather than like rather than specifics. And it's like there's a lot of different better or worse states of well-being. But that's a really complicated topic, and I actually would like to dive into that, but we are coming up on time, and my camera's going to die at some point. So
shout out to the camera.
Shout out to the camera. Back again.
Evan's new camera.
It's
new to you.
It's new. Well, it's actually not. It's actually old and then new again. So this is the point of the podcast, Nicole, that John's aware of.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, John, get out your phone, get your Spotify. It's a music recommendation podcast at the end. What are you most excited about listening to right now, Nicole? And it could be, I know you're big Swiftie, so it can be whatever you want, but anything that you're most excited about listening to right now.
Hold on. Let me pull it up.
John, I actually have a good one. Okay, sweet. I just found it the other day. You don't know about it yet. Okay. So just along with like the recent ones that we've been on, right? What's the ones we've been listening to? Rainer Maria, and Everyone Asked About You. Yeah. Very similar to those vibes. Yes.
That's where we left off in the last time John and I talked.
This is another one, very similar to that. They're called Pogo. P-O-H-G-O-H.
Okay.
And Friend X. Pogo. Friend X. You'll love it.
Okay.
It's right. Literally it's the same genres, okay, the stuff sick. That we I'm love. Yeah. I listened to that, I was like, oh, it's another one. Sick. I'm excited. Yeah. Okay. They're a little more low-key, they're a little more cut and rough around the edges than our other ones, which it's already.
Yeah.
But it's good.
So for those, it's like 90s, for those listening, it's like a 90s.
Emo.
It's like a 90s emo with like a female lead.
With a female lead with like very sweet like voice. Yeah, very like, yeah. Low tone. Low tone, sweet voice.
Be careful with your words.
I know. No, I don't know how to describe it. What's ethereal? What is
ethereal?
It? Ethereal. That's what I would say. Maybe, yeah. But like ethereal, but like with dark tones. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's like they have like such a beautiful voice. Yeah. Like useful voice in like a very dark and like deep band that's like, which I love. Yeah, like the heavy bass with like the lead guitar and like the drum, and it's just Pogo. Friend X.
And do you have any songs by them, or
that's the Friend X is the song.
Oh, that's the name of the song.
Okay. Pogo is the name of the band.
Gotcha.
Pogo.
Gotcha.
P-O-H-G-O.
Okay, sweet.
H.
Sweet, sweet. Nicole.
Okay, I'm gonna butcher the name, but I just found this person randomly. Also, I don't know if they're popular. Mon Rivia.
No idea.
Okay. I just found him on like TikTok one day, and I thought it was really cool.
TikTok's so. Actually a good place to find.
What kind of music is it?
It's like music I would listen to like going on like a hike or like just like sitting outside kind of thing.
But what kind of like genre is it
though? I don't even know. No? I just listened to like one song the other day, and it's just made.
It's chill.
Just,
all right, we'll have to look at it.
Same. Yeah. All right. Is it like? Do you have any like?
Can
you
play a snippet?
No, you can't play copyright.
I'm not gonna play the song.
Is it like reggae, rap, rock? Can it be described as anything?
Indie? It's own genre.
No, you know what's it called?
Yeah, that one.
That one. Yeah.
That was good.
I would say like not soul, like kind of newer soul, I guess. Like
R&B, like
yeah.
Soul.
Yeah.
Smooth and soul.
Smooth. Yeah. Okay. Cool. No, that's sick. I'll add it to the description.
What about you, Evan?
What's Please your... take it out. I've been listening to the music and then like go back and be like, no, she totally butchered that.
No, we've gotten some wild recommendation. I've been listening to Flat Sound recently. Yeah. Really sad. I exist. It's a great song. By Your Side is a great song.
I'm actually very curious. Sorry, I didn't mean to take this away from you. I'm very curious about how you think about Evan and I's like music tastes. I don't think you actually know type of music where
you got
a little bit into like what I was doing on the drive home, but like I was like that was giving you a taste.
You like the sad punk rock.
Yeah. But I haven't showed you like the
it's
like
more wide than that.
Yeah, I know.
But that is.
But what do you what do you think about that stuff? I'm just curious.
No, I love. Okay. I mean, I
don't lie.
Primarily, no, I like. Well, I mean, that's fun to like listen
She's
to.
She's like,
but
this freaking bullshit again.
No, please
turn it off.
I like soft rock, like 80s kind of soft rock kind of stuff.
Yeah, 80s soft rock.
Yeah,
I feel like either people like with like the taste that you and I have, people are either like, oh yeah, they know good music, or they're like, you guys listen to garbage. Yeah.
Or like Nick Cage. Like that kind of stuff's good. Nick Cave. Edit that out too. Nick Cave. I love Nicolas Cage, by the way.
He stole the Declaration of Independence. You know
Yeah.
I don't think we're supposed to talk about that.
Oh, it's a secret with the aliens. No, cool. Awesome. Thank you guys for being on. I really appreciate
it.
John, I don't even know how many times it's been for you. Returning guest.
Also, thank you, Nicole, for letting us do this.
Yeah, thanks.
Your beautiful abode.
Yes.
Humble abode.
Thank you so much for
letting
us
when you guys get
home.
The check, just leave it on my
account. Yeah, we'll make sure. Yeah.
She fed us, too,
cash
before
or
this.
Check?
So.
Cash.
I like cash. Yeah,
cash. Okay. Venmo?
Cash. Yeah, Venmo?
No, just cash.
Okay, oh, sweet. Okay.
No, you got to pay the dog. You got to pay the edit girl.
Pay Brad his food.
No, thank you, Nicole. It really means a lot that you sat down and talked to me and John. You were great to talk to, very interesting person. I know you said you had nothing to talk to, but as soon as you talk about aliens, you got like it just was off to the races. So
my eyes light up at aliens.
I like how like love it was like
I am an alien. I just want everyone to know that.
And then aliens was like I have everything to say about
aliens.
No, you were great to talk to, and I'm really interested in your perspective. So thank you so much for being on.
Thanks,
bye.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.